Now, I don't know if you were like me and you managed to skip it last night, but there was a leaders' debate between Malcolm Turnbull and opposition leader Bill Shorten. Now, it was held at the National Press Club in Canberra. And to give us a bit of a take on how it all went down, I'm joined now by the Sydney Morning Herald's political editor, Peter Harcher. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Jamie.
How was it?
Well, it was a pretty serious exchange on mainly pretty substantive policy. Of course, this was to the frustration and chagrin of much of the press gallery and social media, which was hoping for a dust-up. And while there were some firm and pointed exchanges, there were no spectacular moments, no flare-outs. So in that sense, it didn't satisfy as a theatrical event. But it was a pretty high-quality exchange between two pretty well-matched adversaries. I mean, if you really want entertaining spectacles for your politics, then, you know, you'll end up with Donald Trump in America or Duterte in the Philippines. I don't think either our problems are severe enough that the people have given up on the system to revert to those sorts of utterly destructive candidates, nor do we really, in my view, want the country to be... I don't think the country would be better served if we had maniacs and pure theatrics running the show, but that was the thrust of the contest.
Well, I suppose the thing is, if you want a bit of biffo, you know, State of Origin is on this Wednesday,
and, exactly,
and that's not really what you want from your political leaders. I mean, yes, social media, with the rise of BuzzFeed and stuff, loves a gaffe and things like that. But you reckon it was quite substantive what they were getting into last night, quite high grade.
Yeah, it was.
What were the big themes?
The big themes were laid out in pretty much home brand or archetypal Labor versus Liberal stands. You had Malcolm Turnbull, who introduced himself as a man who had spent a lifetime building businesses and creating jobs, talking about the primacy of economic growth being fundamental to everything else, creating jobs, creating the revenue to pay for everything else, including health and education. You had on the other hand, the other theme too, in terms of the Liberals playing to their perceived traditional strength. So you have economic growth on the one hand, and also border security on the other, and taunting Labor and saying Labor's policy, Labor's split and wouldn't be able to keep the borders secure on asylum seekers. And on the other hand, you had Bill Shorten standing up and saying, "Well, I'm a man who's always stood for the fair go," former union organizer. Saying it's not just about economic growth. We need that, but we also need fairness, and talking a lot about Labor's perceived traditional strengths of health and education, refuting Turnbull on boats and saying, "No, we now have the same policy as you guys. Shame on you for trying to play politics with this." So they were the main sort of... it was almost identikit politics, the successful businessman pitching economic growth for the Libs, the successful Labor leader and union organizer pitching fairness for Labor.
Well, it does seem to have come down to that. I mean, you've got the Libs talking, jobs and growth is their kind of catch cry for this election. You've then got Labor who's talking about hospital and education. I think, as your colleague Annabelle Crabb put it recently, she said, you've got a former banker who wants a royal commission into the unions, and you've got a former unionist who wants a royal commission into the banks.
Well, Bill Shorten rather snappily summed it up last night on his own terms by saying the difference between Malcolm Turnbull and me is that he wants to give the big banks a tax cut and I want to give them a royal commission.
I'm sure he'd been waiting to use that one.
In general, playing to their traditional brand strengths, while it's fine, it doesn't really solve the political problem that either has, and that is that to go from being a tribal leader to a national leader, you have to appeal across, not just to your tribe. You have to appeal to the nation. You have to appeal beyond your 30-40% of the vote to the 50-60-70 to cover the center. So neither of them has really compellingly done that, and the status quo, I would suggest to you, Jamie, favors the incumbent. It favors Turnbull. You have to go back to the 1930s to find the last time Australia kicked out a first-term federal government. So history's on Turnbull's side. Labor has a big task ahead because Labor needs to win 21 seats to govern in its own right. That's a big task. Malcolm enjoying a big buffer there, but also in the national debate, playing on the theme of economic strength and perceived economic credibility, that is the essence of where national campaigns are won and lost. Health and education are always crucial, but in the hierarchy of federal issues, they're a second-order issue. They're seen more as state government issues of the distribution of services, whereas national economic growth is always the prime area of federal debate. So based on where we are at the moment, you'd have to say the two are evenly matched, the electorate's pretty evenly divided, and yet because of the benefits of incumbency and the big buffer that Turnbull has and his undoubted strength on economic growth, it favours the incumbent, and the task is still with Shorten if he wants to win.
If you've just joined us, I'm here with the Sydney Morning Herald's political editor, Peter Harcher, giving us a bit of a wrap on last night's National Press Club leaders debate. Now, Peter, you've hit on something there. You know, Labor does need to win a lot of seats. I think you're looking at 21 seats to form government. Presumably, do you think they'll lose Batman?
Because of the sterling performance of David Feeney.
One David Feeney, yes.
Yeah, it's looking pretty dodgy. It was already under pressure even before
Feeney
obliged the Liberal Party by being, you know, the clumsiest candidate in the Labor Party in this election.
It's been absolutely unbelievable. So let's say they lose Batman, so then they're going to need 22 seats to form government. I mean, that's a huge task.
Yes, and it's unlikely to happen. It's as simple as that. I mean, they need a swing. The swing is never uniform, but just to give you an idea of the size of the task, Labor needs a swing to it from the last election of a little over 4%, about 4.1%, 4.2%. That would be one of the two or three biggest swings since the two-party system was set up in 1949.
Mm.
So it would be a massive swing. And if you just look at the situation at the moment, look around at the landscape, you know, you've got a first-term government. Things are never perfect, but you've got reasonable economic growth. There are no riots in the streets. Well, there was a minor blue in Melbourne, but there's hardly a popular uprising against a government. So there's no angry mood. There's a lot of disappointment with Turnbull, but the country's not angry at Turnbull. And so you'd have to say on balance that Turnbull will win unless, I mean, we've still got nearly 5 weeks to go. So unless Shorten can do something to seize momentum, to embrace and win on those federal issues of growth and assure the electorate about asylum seekers, you'd have to say the odds still favour Turnbull.
Mm. And just briefly on Shorten, Peter, I mean, the transformation that we've seen in the opposition leader this year, I mean, you compare the Bill Shorten of 2015 with the Bill Shorten of 2016, it's like looking at two different people.
It is. You know, though, what's happened, in my view, the reason that he's getting a lot better ratings in the polls and a lot more public appreciation is because Turnbull opened the way for him by disappointing. Turnbull, at the outset, you'll remember late last year, Turnbull had just such a commanding lead in the polls. He had absurd levels of approval. Expectations were sky high.
You called them Rudd-esque almost.
Yes, they were, exactly. And with that going on, nobody really paid Shorten any attention at all. But because Malcolm has disappointed so continuously, as he abandoned, excuse me, one after another, all of the policy areas that he was traditionally associated with, he's shrunk to such a size that it's allowed the electorate the time, the scope, and now in an election campaign, Shorten also gets the media exposure for the public to have a look at the other bloke as well. And the more they see, the more they think he's plausible as a candidate, the more they like what they hear, and that builds support for Shorten, and that builds Shorten's confidence, and then you get into a self-reinforcing cycle where Shorten's fired up by confidence, by approval, and keeps forging ahead. I mean, he hasn't broken the clinch. The two of them are still in the clinch. Look at the polls. They're 50-50, and for the reasons we've talked about, on the current status, Shorten is unlikely to win. But as you say, he's made tremendous progress in the last few months, and, you know, he's really made this into a contest, largely because Malcolm allowed it to happen.
Mm. Now, just very quickly, Peter Hatcher, on the debate, who took it out last night?
If you were calling it as a traditional debate, I'd say it's a tie.
Right, okay, fair enough. There you have it. Well, Peter, it's always great speaking to you, depth of knowledge and all that. Let's catch up soon, okay?
Okay, thanks, Jamie. Wonderful. Pleasure.